the J Talk Podcast.
Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, two full rounds of J1 games since our last episode with some topsy-turvy results from one match day to the next. You just never know what you're going to get in this league.
Oh, not at all. I thought midweek that the league was kind of turned upside down with the way that the table looked after those games. We've sort of reverted back to a bit more familiarity with Frontale and Marinoff and the top two. But yeah, it was two very interesting match days. I thought the midweek was fantastic. A little slower on Sunday, but still plenty for us to get our teeth into.
Yes, most definitely. And once again, well done for your rapid fire match day 7 review in midweek, Sam. Once again, well received by the patrons, and we just don't know how you do it.
Well, with difficulty this time. This is the first time with the 8 games playing at the same time, so it took me a while to really get into that again. But yeah, hopefully I didn't miss anything too major. I'm sure someone would have let me know if I had.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the biggest shock to most of us was Kashiwa going top after winning on Tuesday night, right? But they've actually slid down the table a few spaces after what happened on Wednesday, and then again their loss on Saturday night away at Kawasaki. And speaking of Frontale, we'll be joined later on by Neil Debnam to chat about the defending champions and their recent wobbles. Well, it's probably a bit of an over-exaggeration to call them that, but when we're used to this winning machine just going about their merry way, the fact that, they were battered by Cerezo Osaka last weekend and then, weren't able to defeat Iwata in midweek, perhaps sent some alarm bells ringing amongst the Frontale support. So we'll take the temperature of that through Neil later on in the episode. As we start to record on Monday evening, Neil's actually winging his way home from work. So, we'll be catching up with him later on in the episode. I mentioned recent wobbles, Sam. Well, obviously, Kobe have been the major proponents of those since the J1 season started. And we've had some very interesting news around them in the past couple of days, and also as it's broken on Monday night, related to the ACL group.
Yeah, everything's happening around Kobe, isn't it? We wondered last week with Alan whether Planaguma was like the main idea of that he was going to take them forward, but they've changed already. They've gone to Miguel Angel Lotina, who I think is kind of the J League version of Sam Allardyce. He seems to come in as a firefighter. I don't think it's necessarily the ideal manager for Kobe. They want to play this expressive Barcelona-style football. You know you're not going to get that with Lotina. Maybe he can sort out that defence. I don't think he did a great job of it with the limited time he had going into the Cerezo game. But, yeah, it's a very interesting, and it screams of panic to me, that hiring. I think it's a weird one. Like, get a good manager in at Kobe, get those players playing good football, and they're not going to be in a relegation struggle. So, yeah, it seemed a bit more panic to me, but they've got some, I suppose, better news in the ACL. Shanghai have pulled out due to COVID concerns, so their group now is just down to 3 teams. It's Kobe, Kitchi, and it is Chiangrai United. So I don't know, does that make it easier? I don't think it makes actually much difference if Shanghai were going to send an under-22 team, but it gives them a bit more time before their next game. Their first match day has now been cancelled, so Lotina has time on the training field to get his ideas across. But yeah, it's a very interesting period again for Vissel Kobe.
Yeah, we've been speaking about them a lot, obviously, and their struggles in the early stages of this season. In no means at all is it a forward-thinking appointment, is it? And, you know, no pun intended when it comes to Lotina and his reputation as a defensive coach. I think it's left a lot of us scratching our heads, Sam, as you say, to put out a fire perhaps and maybe just rescue them out of the doldrums that they're in. But yeah, they're not going to be playing the type of football that they apparently want to if he's in charge, are they?
Well, I very much doubt it. I don't think he was majorly defensive in this game against Cerezo Osaka, but it's not like he had a great deal of time to work on anything in training. But I just think it's the wrong time for this sort of change. Maybe if there was 9 games to go rather than 9 games played, then you just send Latina in, sort it out, and then you move on for the next season. But it's just like kind of backwards thinking, I think, for Kobe to bring him in so early into the season. I mean, yeah, it just screams of panic, which is unnecessary. I mean, they're 3 points off the safety. They're not going to go down, really, realistically, as funny as it may be for many people in the journey. But Kobe have enough players. I just think, why are they, maybe it's people argue that they haven't really reached the Barcelona vacation or whatever they were trying, and they've not really had that consistent plan. But I think to go with all the stuff that they, the rhetoric they have about how they want to play, I think this is a very weird move.
Yeah, well, as you say, he's got some time to get the squad in some sort of shape in Thailand before their ACL group stage opener. Of course, with the Shanghai dropping out, it means that Kobe will now only play 4 group stage games instead of 6. And hopefully you can get them in some sort of working order and come back into domestic duties with some sort of confidence, because that's completely bereft at the moment at the Noivir Stadium. And another defeat, leaving them winless after 10 league games. I tell you what, Sam, we were going to start with the Kashima F. Marinos game, but since we've started chatting about Kobe off the top, we might as well talk about their 1-0 defeat at the hands of Cerezo Osaka on Sunday that sent them away to the ACL, as we've said, winless and second from bottom in the table. For Cerezo, it was Mutsuki Kato who headed in a cross from deep on the left by Ryosuke Yamanaka in the 27th minute, and that proved to be the difference in the game for Kobe. Just before halftime, Koya Yuruki side-footed wide after some fancy footwork from Andres Iniesta, and then their last big chance came in second-half stoppage time when Ryuho Kikuchi's header came back off the post. So, I guess it wasn't quite as bad as the midweek 3-1 loss away at FC Tokyo, Sam. But again, they've failed to score, just 5 goals in 10 league games as they head off to the ACL. There weren't any real signs of a turnaround here in this game, were there?
No, it was another pretty poor performance, and that's twice now they've tried to get a new manager bounce and it's fallen flat. I don't think there's a lot will take a look at and look at positively from this game. I thought first half they tried, there was a bit of effort, but there was a lack of any real quality in the efforts that they had. And then defensively, that goal is a really poor one to concede. No one goes in to challenge Yamanaka as he's putting the ball in, and everyone knows how good a crosser he is. And then Kato was left completely unmarked in the area to head in. So that was not great from them. And then second half, there was just nothing until the last couple of minutes of probably added time. It's when Kobe actually decided to try and press for an equaliser. But other than that, it was so simple for Cerezo. It was just lifeless performance from Kobe. And it just highlights the work that Lotina has to do to sort this team out.
Yeah, most definitely. But again, kudos to Cerezo for taking care of business. And they're actually looking fairly decent, up in 6th in the table after they've played 8 league games. And obviously it was Hiroto Yamada who grabbed a brace and a lot of the headlines after the win against Kawasaki last weekend. But I think Kato is arguably, you could tell me you disagree, Sam. I think Kato is probably the jewel in the crown for Cerezo as far as young attacking players go, at least in the strike force. And he was very important on their road to the Levain Cup final last season. And he's a player I really like. So I was happy to see him get this goal here. And also Yamanaka, I mean, he's been reborn, hasn't he? And he's made this left back spot at Cerezo his own now, I think. And an absolutely terrific cross that is obviously his trademark.
Yeah, it's just a real shame that he was forced off injured before half-time, Yamanaka, because, he's just been a player reborn in that left-back role. Yeah, he's just taken over from Marahashi, who can't really get a look in, and has played very well. Some of the deliveries in this game, in previous games, have just been magnificent. But, it's a real shame. Hopefully, it's not too bad, the injury, and he might be back for the next game, hopefully. But, be a little worry if they do lose him, because defensively as well, he's looked pretty good, combined with Jornic, who's just stepped back in and just doesn't look like he's been away. And I agree with you on Kato. I think maybe he's had a slightly slower start to this season than he ended last year. I think he had a couple of little knocks that have maybe stunted him, but Yeah, he played really well here. The movement was very good to get the space. And yeah, with him and Yamada, who was, I've never really been a massive fan of Yamada, but this year he looks like he's really up for it. He looks like he's taking his game to another level. And so they've got really good attacking players. If you think Wajo didn't get into this squad, they've still got Taga injured. Inui had been a bad boy and had been put into the naughty step by the manager, and he wasn't in the squad. So there's a lot of really good attacking talent in this squad, as well as a really solid defence. So yeah, I like a lot about what I've seen so far this season from Cerezo Osaka.
Yes, indeed. Obviously, we've been piling on Kobe on, you know, seemingly a week-to-week basis. So we want to make sure that we give credit to the teams that are taking care of them. And yes, Cerezo did so on Sunday. And yeah, echo your sentiments there on Yamanaka. He's yeah, it looks like he's getting a proper run in this team. So we hope that, yeah, injury does not put an extended stop to that. So yeah, well done to Cerezo. And I tell you what, while we're on the theme of underperforming sides that most had predicted for the top six but find themselves in the bottom six, Sam, before we head up to Kashima, let's travel over to Nagoya, who their struggle for consistency at the start of this campaign continued when they hosted Sapporo on Sunday. Well, as for Grampus, they'd won at home on Wednesday against bottom club Shonan, but that came courtesy of a Hiroyuki Abe stoppage time penalty. And, well, yeah, that narrow victory was followed by a meek 2-0 Toyota Stadium defeat at the hands of previously winless Sapporo, who themselves were fresh off a 5-0 battering at Tosu in midweek. I mean, this result just sums up the unpredictability of J1, doesn't it, Sam? I mean, credit to Consadole and to Hiroki Miyazawa and Taika Nakashima for their second half goals, but really worrying signs for Kenta Hasegawa and his Nagoya side.
Yeah, well, you took my line there. It is the unpredictability of the J-League, and that's why we love it. But this was such a weird game. Nagoya had chances. Paul Sakai is getting to the point now where I just feel sorry for him. With the chances that he's missing, he's taken whatever Lukian's got, and they really need to meet up and figure things out. But it's not gone well for him. The first one, Sugano has had a very good game. He made a number of good saves, first from Sakai's diving header, but then it's just a tap in the other follow-up and he can't make contact. And in the second half, where Sugano actually drops the ball, Sakai is in. He's just in front of goal. He just has to put it in from like 2 yards out and somehow hits the post. And that just kind of summed up Nagoya's day going forward, which we always knew was going to be an issue with their lack of real clinical strikers. But the defence that you could always rely upon with Ficadente has just fallen apart a little bit. I mean, it was weird that he played Fuji alongside Nakatani for the last two games. Thiago Pagnosat dropped to the bench, and I'm not really sure why, because they didn't look very good. They obviously conceding from free kicks, which is not really what you'd see under a Ficadente side or Nagoya for the last few years. And yeah, if they're conceding poorly like that and then don't have the quality up front to go and score, there are real issues at the moment with Nagoya. Granted, a few of their key players aren't playing towards the same levels of last season. I'd say Shoin Agaki is probably one of those. He was taken off at halftime last week just because he himself had put his hands up and said, "I have had a terrible first half." And he was off again this weekend. And yeah, it's just a really weird one with Nagoya. It's just not clicking for Hasegawa at the moment. Definitely the players to turn that around. But yeah, this was a disappointing performance. Although with a clinical striker, they go 1-0 up, and it could be a very different story, especially with Sapporo surely a little bit tender after being pasted 5-0 in midweek.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I echo your thoughts there on Sakai. I mean, you've just got a feel for him, don't you? It's just, yeah, I mean, he just couldn't hit a barn door at this stage. I mean, that ball in from Mateus in the 14th minute was just absolutely, I'm struggling to find the right word for it. Sumptuous might be a little bit over-egging it, but yeah, absolutely, just an absolutely stunning ball right on the head of Sakai, who, yeah, all he has to do is make contact. He makes great contact with his diving header, but right at Sugino, and he's there to make a remarkable save. Although, yeah, Sakai, again, he's got to do better with the follow-up, and that, the second half chances Well, that'll be haunting him for weeks, I'm sure. But again, for Sapporo, yeah, credit to them for their two excellent goals. Miyazawa headed in your man Akito Fukumori's free kick 4 minutes into the second half. And that young striker, Taika Nakashima, there's definitely something about him, that's for sure. He came on for Gabriel Xavier in the 61st minute, and just 2 minutes later, he headed Ryota Aoki's cross through Mitch Langerak's legs for a 2-0. They actually scored a third goal just 4 minutes later in the 67th minute through Tomoki Takamine. But yeah, both Nakashima and I think Takamine himself were offside in the move when Nakashima headed across goal and Takamine side-footed in. So yeah, two legal goals, and that was more than enough for Consadole to see off Grampus, who, yeah, are stuck down in the bottom six, and Sapporo edged a spot above them in the table up to 12th with their first league win of the season. And yeah, such a strange looking win-loss record, isn't it, Sam, for Sapporo? One win, six draws, and one defeat after eight played. But yeah, Misha Petrovic's sides, we know they're capable of playing some excellent stuff. And I a little birdie tells me that they're the lunchtime game this Saturday. So they'll be waking you up early. And, well, yeah, hopefully FC Tokyo can live up to their end of the bargain and give you a decent decent game to watch at stupid o'clock over there in the UK.
Yeah, let's hope so. They do this every year. It's always Sapporo that get me up, but usually they deliver, and maybe it's great, maybe it's terrible from them, but it's never dull, so I'm sure Sapporo Tokyo should be an excellent game.
Yes, yes. All right, well, yeah, let's head up towards the top of the table then. Indeed, Kashima Antlers rose to the summit in midweek after their fifth straight win, which was away at Fukuoka, and in an end-to-end ding-dong battle against Yokohama F. Marinos, who, of course, are right up in the top four themselves. Yeah, they turned on quite a show at the Kashima Soccer Stadium. The DAZN highlights were very much Kashima-centric in terms of chances created, Sam, but it was end-to-end, and obviously the final shot count shows that F. Marinos well and truly outshot their hosts. And, well, yes, they finally broke the deadlock, did the visitors, with just 8 minutes left. And from there, well, it was a procession, and the home fans went home in probably in a state of disbelief that a game that they were in up until the last 10 minutes, that their side had lost 3-0.
Yeah, it was a very weird crumbling from Kashima Antlers. It might be something that we thought might happen with their defence, that like, it's been kind of patched together. It's not great. Misao still having to play at the back, and this time it did fall apart. Previously, I mean, they'd conceded just 5 in 7 games, which is incredible given the players that are there. But yeah, it just all went terribly wrong in the final 10 minutes, because previously, as you said, it was an end-to-end game, and the more clear chances did fall to Kashima, but it wasn't like it was dominant from them at all. It was Yokohama who had the ball, they went had a chance, it went down the other end, Kashima had a chance, and they just failed to take their chances in this game where they're usually so clinical. Missed a couple, Suzuki not quite getting too many chances away, and Marinos, in fairness to them, they were clinical in that final 10 minutes. Anderson Lopez scoring, I think that's his first ever goal that's not been deflected, a tap-in or a penalty, so well done to him. It was a very good header, I have to admit. And yeah, that just kind of set the procession going. The defending, poor Kim Min-tae, who came into this, he came on fairly late into the game to apparently shore up the defence, but he was just completely lost for the second and the third goals. And just, yeah, it just didn't go well at all there. Antlers, it was just, yeah, weird. And poor Kim Min-tae, I mean, he got away from Sapporo, which is just an attacking team that don't really care about their defence. Had a lovely cushy job in the Nagoya with Vicadenti, and he's been thrown into this one where they're all over the place. That second goal where they are loosely marking 3v3 at the back post, but not really. And it was just too easy in the end for F. Marinos. So a really good win for them after maybe a little shaky period, losing to Hiroshima in midweek. But so that sends them second going into the ACL. And yeah, it might just be cause for a little rethink for Kashima defensively.
Yeah, very much so. Maybe time for a reset under Rene Weiler. Yeah, as we said, things were going swimmingly for Antlers. Five straight league wins, and as I said, up to top spot in the table. But in the last 10 minutes, it was your man Anderson Lopez, and one of the outs from Sendai in our, I think, our first episode of this year that I actually failed to mention, Takuma Nishimura, who has become a key part of this F Muddy Nose attack. And we've referenced it a number of times in recent weeks, Sam, the way that they've Kevin Muscat has deployed their squad, and he's had to obviously chop and change a lot of players, due to injuries and unavailability. But yeah, Nishimura has, whether he's playing up front on his own or whether he's playing in a slightly withdrawn role, as he has done in the past few weeks, he has, he's just fitted into life at the Nissan Stadium like a duck to water.
Yeah, he's been fantastic, and they needed him really, with Marcos Junior missing large parts of this season so far. And he just finds that space just off the defence. He just sits, drops off that line. He's not really picked up, and the amount of late headers he scored this season. I'm trying to think back to his time at Sendai. I don't really remember him being that major an aerial threat. But yeah, he's done a really good job for F. Marinos, as have a lot of the kind of fringe players that have been forced to play this season due to injuries, COVID, all that sort of thing. That's a really good sign for them, when it's going to be such a difficult season with the extra games of the ACL coming up. They know that they can put in pretty much anyone they like into these positions, and they're not really going to let them down. So yeah, it's looking like Nishimura at the moment is one of the signings of the season. And unheralded at the start of the season. He listened to that first podcast and was furious, I heard. So it's really fueled him for this season.
The checks can be sent to J-Talk Towers, F. Marino supporters. It looks like I've lit a fire under Nishimura, and he is, well and truly, proving his worth for his new team. And, terrific header here, we should say, completely unmarked. But, yeah, he's still got to put it in the net, and he did so with aplomb. So, well done to him for the second goal for F. Marinos. And the third, I think Kento Misao has taken over from Mitsuo Ogasawara as the complainer in chief at Kashima Antlers. So there won't be too many people who were feeling too sorry for Kento. Maybe Sean Carroll accepted when he steered in a low cross from Leo Ciara late on to, well and truly ice the 3 points for F. Marinos. And, condemn Antlers to, a little bit of a head-scratching defeat, because with 10 minutes to go, obviously it was anybody's game. And then F. Marinos well and truly snatched the 3 points, and very happy to take them back to the Nissan Stadium as they jet off for the ACL, of course. All right, so we'll move on to two upwardly mobile teams who have started April in fine style. First to the Sanga Stadium, where Kyoto hosted Tosu. That is a Tosu, of course, who, smashed to smithereens Consadole Sapporo 5-0 on Wednesday night. So, what happened when they rocked up to Kyoto? Well, they were Peter Utaka'd to the tune of 3-1. Utaka went top of the goal scoring charts in J1 with his fifth and sixth goals of the season. Firstly, giving Sanga a 10th minute lead with a crisp finish from Kosuke Shirai's cross. Then after Sota Kawasaki made it 2-0 with a back post header from a corner for his first J1 goal just 4 minutes later, Utaka wrapped up the points with 20 minutes left, rolling into an empty net after pouncing on a poor Wataru Harada back pass and checking back inside both Harada and Park Il-gyu. Tosu did grab a consolation from the penalty spot through Yuji Ono's first of the season in the 77th minute. That was about 5 minutes after VAR first decided to take a look at it, after Fuchi Honda's shot hit Mendez's arm. But it was too little too late, as Sagan suffered their first defeat of the season, and Kyoto rose above them in the table to seventh. So the good times are well and truly rolling, aren't they, Sam, at the Sanga Stadium? And the ageless wonder Peter Utaka is once again front and centre.
Oh, he's ridiculous, isn't he? I mean, last, well, 8 days, they played three games, and he's 38 and has played 90 minutes in all of them, and he's still sprinting towards the end of the game. I think, it's absolutely unbelievable to think I had slight concerns about them playing a 38-year-old this season. Well and truly been proven wrong there. Both of his goals were so well taken. The first one, a first-time strike into the bottom corner, no chance for Park. And, yeah, he gets help from Tosu for the third goal, but the composure, the turn, the no-look finish, it was just class personified from Utaka. He's been magnificent for Kyoto, but it's not just Utaka. I think they're playing so well collectively, the way that in this game they were just so quick onto Tosu. They didn't let them settle, and they got those two goals early and really put the pressure on Tosu. I just think Kawasaki at 20 just looks a quality player in midfield. And defensively, they're not too bad either. They can't have any complaints with the handball. What the VAR are doing for 5 minutes to check this when he so obviously handled it outside of his body. But yeah, otherwise, they defended really well. There was one in the second half, I think it was Araki putting across the area low towards Kakita, and Asada makes an incredible recovery tackle. And that just kind of summed up the way that Kyoto played throughout the pitch. I thought they were terrific and well-deserved their 3-1 victory.
So what about Tosu then? Just a hangover from Wednesday night's 5-0 victory then? Just the lazy 7-goal turnaround in goal difference swing for them? What can you put it down to? Obviously, a young squad. There aren't that many midweek rounds of J1, are there? Obviously, Levain Cup excluded when they're probably playing their reserves, Sam. So just in American sports terms, maybe just a schedule loss for Tosu on Sunday?
Possibly. I just think they lost concentration in this game. And generally, a lot of the goals they've conceded this season have been their own errors, just playing it out a bit too casual. Like that third goal is really poor. But Park, on his day, he's so good, but he just takes so many chances. And a lot of this game, he was been making poor errors, poor passes out from the back. And it just kind of fed through the team, I thought. And whether that's a little bit of complacency sneaking in from the 5-0 victory in midweek, or just maybe some tired minds after the travel, I suppose, and the three games, I don't know. But they just weren't really focused, I didn't think, and I'm sure that won't be allowed to happen again. And they'll put this down as just one of those days and move on.
Yeah, I mean, they'd only conceded two goals in their first seven games, hadn't they? So to let in three in the one game on Sunday will, hopefully open some eyes and, get them refocused on the training ground ahead of the weekend's match day. Nine. Okay. Mentioned that Kyoto are upwardly mobile in April, as are Sanfrecce Hiroshima, who, just a couple of weeks ago were playing a battle of the bottom against Shonan Bellmare. And now after three straight wins, they are up to eighth in the table. But they did leave it very, very late, didn't they, Sam, to see off Vispa Fukuoka 1-0 at home on Sunday. They arguably should have gone 1-0 up just before the hour, but a terrific save from Masaaki Murakami to deny Ryo Nagai from the penalty spot kept this game goalless. Up the other end, about 10 minutes later, Keisuke Osako, the Hiroshima keeper, saved Wanma's shot at his near post. The telling moment came in the 94th minute when Kosei Shibasaki stooped to head home Shunki Higashi's cross in from the left. So, they did leave it very, very late, but they were able to celebrate another key 3 points at the full-time whistle, Sanfrecce.
Yeah, heartbreaker for Vispa, who'd defended pretty well throughout the game and they'd managed to keep the scoreless. But I thought Hiroshima were the better team, and they did so. They came into the day, I think they had a late withdrawal of three players after one tested positive and the other two were close contacts. All three probably would have started in midfield. So for them to have been able to change on the fly as well as they did and generally control the game, I thought was very good. I thought, they deserve their victory. I thought Mitsuta, this young kid, is so good. He's just been, yeah, incredible last few games for Hiroshima, and it's really been him that's been put in by Skiba, and his link-up with Morishima, I think, has been, yeah, so good, and it makes up for the lack of striker up front. I mean, there was no doubt in my mind when Nagai went to take that penalty that he was going to miss, because, yeah, he just doesn't have that confidence at all. And, yeah, so why he took it, I don't know. Maybe just trying to get him something, but, yeah, those two players, though, Morishima and Mitsuta, have really dragged this team along. And you've got to give a lot of credit to Michael Skipper. We said for the first few games, they didn't get the results under him, but there was definitely a move in a positive direction. And now they're seeing some fruits of that labour. And it's, yeah, it's really good to see, because at the start of the season, you were thinking, oh, Hiroshima, maybe not relegation candidates, but they might be flirting towards that sort of area. But they've turned it around with very limited resources and have just put a real gem out from wherever it was, university.
Yeah, he looks great, doesn't he, Mitsuta? Absolutely, absolutely fantastic. As you said, a heartbreaker for Fukuoka, but again, another toothless display from them, that Wanma chance aside, perhaps. I mean, the official J-League's shot count makes it 9-2 in favour of Hiroshima. But if you if you want to look on the bright side, Fukuoka supporters, check Google, because it's 10-3 on there. But whichever way you slice it, Sam, Fukuoka are they're struggling out the gate. I don't think there's any other way to sugarcoat it, is there? One win and four draws from their eight games so far. Just the four league goals scored, which is at level with Shonan for the lowest in the division through eight match days. So, I don't know. Again, you could tell me that it's still too early to make some sort of judgment, but and that, you know, maybe they've played a more testing set of fixtures so far than some of the teams around them. But I don't know. Are we perhaps seeing the symptoms of a second season syndrome here?
Yeah, it's maybe a little bit too early to say second season syndrome. I think they've played generally pretty well in most of the games, but haven't really got those results, have they? They've lacked a real clear striker. I mean, Lukian, it's just not worked out for him. And they're not really getting too many goals from Wanma or Yamagishi. So, yeah, and then defensively, they've still been pretty solid. So I think they overperformed last season. Maybe like 14th where they are now is probably a little bit more par for the course. So, yeah, they found it a little bit more difficult. But I think performance-wise, there's not too much concern at the moment, although in this game, they were fairly poor and didn't really create too much.
All right, so we hope things turn around for Avispa pretty quick, smart. Next, we'll be joined by Neil Debnam to chat about Kawasaki. And after that, Sam and I will be back to round up the three draws from the Match Day 8 slate. Okay, it's always great to welcome Neil Debnam back to J-Talk. Neil, your side top of the pile in J1, as we've become accustomed to in the last five or six seasons. But, I guess it's fair to say you haven't had it all your own way so far this month. But back on top of the pile, and welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I thought I'd been blackballed after my lengthy diversions on the FC Tokyo one, so I'm pleased to finally get the call.
I know you're our man on Frontale, Neil, no question about that. All vicious rumours have hopefully been wiped away with this appearance. It's great to have you back on, and wanted to get your thoughts on how Frontale supporters are feeling about this season so far, because I think it's fair to say you haven't really hit too many heights so far. And obviously that was a big defeat against Cerezo the previous weekend. But here we are as you head off to the ACL with your games starting there this Friday. And as we said, in top spot in the table. As a general theme, before we get into the specifics from Saturday night, how have you found this season so far?
Quite painful, to be honest, but not just because of the results. That the whole experience has been pretty rotten so far this year. The only highlights being meeting Johnny Nickel and Tokyo Fox at games this year. That was nice. But aside from that, it's like the 2 hours of the game has been ruining the rest of the day pretty much on every occasion, whether it's home or away. So, I mean, it's kind of a, I think it's, nobody wants to hear the team who's top, even if we are top, having played more games. No one wants to hear their supporters saying we've been awful, but I think we've been extremely lucky this year so far to only lose twice, and extremely lucky to win quite a few games as well. So yeah, it's been tough watching, but it's kind of a relief to not, for it not to be as bad as it probably should have been, if I'm to be believed anyway.
In the past, I think you may have been a little touch harsh on Toru Aniki, I suppose, when you're going on and winning a lot of games. But this season, do you think he really does deserve a little bit of criticism here, especially defensively? We know the injuries that you've got, and there's been no transfers in there at the moment, obviously with the caveat of having played more games, but only Kobe have conceded more than Frontale, which is very unlike a Kawasaki team. And midfield is always a mystery as to who is allowed to play. Joe Schmidt seems to have been joined in exile occasionally by Tatsuki Seko, and Oshima has been in and out, although training, not always in the squad. And yeah, it just seems like there's kind of weird things going on in the background. Is that a sense that you and other Frontale supporters share?
It's definitely been I don't know what the phrase is, but it's been something I've been going on about for ages. And I think maybe some other people might be slightly agreeing with me this year. I mean, not signing any defenders in the off season seems to just be the way we do things now. And I think I kind of didn't expect us to sign anyone, but even though we had Jesse out on a long term injury, it wasn't surprising that we didn't get anyone in, but it was just a little disappointing, of course. And yeah, I totally agree with the midfield. We've got Chanatip and Seko, and they were supposed to be like the big news signings for this year, and Chanatip was pretty much in there every game till he got his ban. Since then, yeah, I don't know where he's disappeared to, but I feel like yeah, I mean, I always have criticised him lightly, and I think I have continued criticising him lightly this year. It just seems like he's very inflexible, and of course we can't do much about the situation at the back because we haven't done the transfers, but just kind of, there's a few players that I would say singled out, but well, yeah, that is pretty much what I've done. I've been moaning about them in every blog post, really. That not moaning, just saying that they shouldn't be playing. Give them a rest, and hopefully they'll get a bit better. I think, just to get my usual moans out of the way, I think Yamane is totally knackered, and he seems like he just won't defend now. He's interested when we're attacking, but I think he's saving all his energy for attacking, and half the time it's like, oh my god, there's nobody there, where's Yamane? And he's just standing in the center circle with his hands on his hips or something like that. And I feel like Wakizaka is feeling the pressure of having Kengo's 14 shirt number, and he hasn't really played particularly well at all this year, I don't think. And Ianaga's done his use of sort of in and out of games and things, but yeah, I think, I mean, this is just my usual moans, but I think maybe certain, I mean, Frontale fans are quite happy clappy, I think the phrase is. And I don't think that people really doubt Oniki that much, apart from myself, of course. I don't know, after Saturday's game, which I'm sure you'll come on to soon, for some reason I'm full of brightness and optimism again, but yeah, it's all a bit of a mystery. The midfield's a mystery. The fact that we can't defend isn't a mystery because of the complete lack of people or condition in that area. But the fact we can't shoot, score or make chances is a little bit worrying, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, yeah, first world problems for the team top of the table, Neil. But yeah, I mean, I think we can all see that this is not the Frontale that we'd become accustomed to seeing over the past few years, Sam. And I don't know, is this have we finally reached the breaking point that I've talked about a couple of times the last 6 months or so, that there was going to become a time when Frontale just lost too many players? And I was mainly, of course, referring to the players that had left for Europe, Tanaka, Morita, and Mitoma. Sorry, yeah, literally the man of the moment who I couldn't think of. But also with the defensive injuries as well has left Oniki scrambling to make a cohesive unit out of his squad. So while Kawasaki are top, I think we're all in agreement that they haven't hit any heights yet so far this season. And I guess we're just wondering whether this is something that will continue or whether it's something that you think that Oniki can turn around.
Well, I think he's still got the players to turn it around. Obviously, he needs defenders fit. Jesse will be massive when he comes back. I think the aim is about May, so maybe get him fit after the ACL, then that'll be a huge boost. And still, even going into the season, I said, when they obviously lost a lot of key players, but still looking at that midfield, if you've got everyone available, there are still very good players in there. There are still good players going forward. Yes, they're not playing particularly well at the moment, but a reliance on Marcinho, which has kind of come a little bit out of nowhere. But there are still really good players in this team, so I'm sure that there's the ability within the squad to turn things around a little bit and play a little bit more like the Frontale we know. But it isn't just it's not just this season thing. Towards the end of last year, they were having to grind out results a little bit more, and so maybe this could have been foreseen a little bit, this kind of slower start to the season, kind of getting a little bit fortunate with certain results and grinding their way to points. But yeah, I mean, you've got to look at that squad and you think they're still, I think, the best squad in the league, at least the best first 11. Maybe they're struggling a little bit with a lack of depth. I'm sure they're very good players and very nice people, but Sukugawa, Kozuka, when you get into those sorts of players, I think it is a real drop off from what the squad has seen in recent years. So but maybe that's sad a little bit, and Oniki feels in certain areas he's not able to rotate because it weakens the side, so, and that in turn is weakening those players that are being forced to play constantly. And I think Wakizaka and Yamane, who's never had a replacement, are probably the ones that have suffered the most from that.
Yeah, fair enough. And I guess one player who is facing a key season, Neil, is Daya Tono. He's come in and started the last two games in the midfield three in place of Chanatip. And he had a couple of decent chances here, fired just wide in the 12th minute. And then in the first minute of the second half, drew a fine save from Kim Sung-gyu from Akihiro Ienaga's cross. Tono volleyed on target, but a fine save from Kim flying to his left. So Tono, is he a player that you like, and what are your expectations for him? If Chanatip doesn't appear to have settled particularly well, so it looks like Tono might have a chance here in the ACL group stage as well to properly cement himself in Oniki's thoughts.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think most people expected Tono to start or to play further forward when he was playing for us. And he did that kind of more last year. But Oniki's really preferring him in the midfield at the moment. And I think he was I thought he was outstanding against Kashiwa. He was like our most exciting player, maybe bar Marcinho. If the two of them weren't playing, the game would have been much more boring. As for Chanatip, it's kind of a mystery because I thought that things were really starting to work for him. Of course, he got the suspension from too many yellow cards. But I thought things were, he was like, he got his first assist, and the kind of passes he was doing were sort of really starting to look pretty exciting. And just sort of communication between him and the forwards was really sort of starting to click a little bit. And then, he's disappeared. So, I mean, I guess it's in sort of a COVID-era football, we never know if people are injured or whether we never know if they're injured anyway. But sometimes maybe we think, oh, perhaps someone's had a positive test or something like that. But I mean, he's fit, and he I guess he hasn't got COVID because he's gone to the ACL. He was in the pictures, so the airport pictures, I mean, not the movies. I mean, it's all a bit of a mystery. And Seco as well. I mean, second half of the Super Cup, on the bench once, and then nothing for a long, long time. And, I mean, Onyeki does tend to sign players, be a bit tough with them in the first year, and then really sort of favour them more in the second year, which probably is happening to Kozuka and Sukugawa this year, that they're more in his plans. But I don't think it's very realistic if you have to give every signing 1 year to settle in. I don't think it's really going to work like that. That's not really going to work very well. But I've meandered so far that I've forgotten the question now. So hopefully I answered it somewhere in the meander.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah. Tono was excellent, so that's good. And a couple of chances for him. Unfortunately, he didn't score. But yeah, thankfully for Frontale and all their supporters, that Leandro Damião did, 2 minutes into first half stoppage time. He'd seen an earlier chance saved by Kim Sung-yu when he was a clean through Leandro. But Tono's ball sent Marcinho racing clear down the left. As I say, in stoppage time, Marcinho drove into the box before squaring for Leandro to side foot home, first time, for what turned out to be the only goal of the game. And the big man, he obviously hasn't hit the heights himself of last season's MVP campaign, Neil, but a vital goal here to get your side back on track after obviously what had been a testing week, the heavy defeat at the hands of Cerezo, and then failing to win away at Iwata in midweek. So we all know how important Leandro is to your side, and his goal earned you a big 3 points on Saturday night.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be, like you said, he's not as sharp this year as well, but I think that's just generally we're just not making chances for him. And it was really nice to see him score, and I think he's always like 100% player. I never have any criticisms of him for his lack of effort or lack of enthusiasm. So it'll be good if he can sort of push on from this and start getting a few more goals. But of course, if we don't get the ball to him in the right place, he can't score. Well, he can maybe from his own half sometimes, but I mean, only on rare occasions. But I think his sort of lack of goals and lack of form, perhaps, I'm just being kind to him because he's a nice guy. But I feel like I don't think he's done particularly badly with what he's been served up with. So, I think the real problem is we just haven't been making chances, and especially not if we don't go behind, we seem to really not do anything. If against Jubilo on the Wednesday, which was pretty horrendous game, another 2 hours interruption into what was otherwise a great day. We didn't do anything really till we went behind, I didn't think. And it seems like, I don't know, it's like there's some kind of I don't know if we are resting on our laurels or whether there's, like you said, there's some kind of something going on behind the scenes or something, but there definitely seems to be a lack of confidence in the squad at the moment. And perhaps that's the kind of lack of confidence you get from conceding 4 goals twice in the first 8 games of the season. So I guess it's understandable. But hopefully, after the if we do okay in the ACL, maybe we'll come back firing a bit more than we were before, perhaps.
Yeah. Do you think the upcoming ACL is a good chance to really get this team into form? Maybe get a bit more confidence, a few goals. Obviously, Ulsan's a very difficult game, but Guangzhou's under 22s and the home side JDT from Malaysia, they're pretty reasonable opponents, and you'd expect Kawasaki to beat both of those sides pretty comfortably. So do you see this is a really good moment for them maybe to just get a few more players into form? I know last season Tachibana really came through in that tournament during that group stage, and is there anyone that you might think given a couple of games that could then put themselves into contention for maybe more starts towards the end of the season.
I think it on paper it's a great opportunity, but we do seem to have a habit of turning like a good opportunity on paper in the ACL into a bit of a disaster. And I mean, the way we went out last year was just ridiculously limp and like probably one of the worst performances of the year, just for no apparent reason in one of the biggest games of the year. So I think, yeah, I think it is a good opportunity. And I'm not sure particularly that it will provide a chance for anyone to break through, because now, I mean, on what day was it? Saturday? Yes, on Saturday, yeah. Against Kashiwa, Oniki apparently finally changed our formation into a sort of double defensive midfielder with Joanne Schmidt playing alongside Tachi Bernarda. Well, that was what was officially happening, but to be honest, it looked more like Tachi Bernarda was just playing a bit further forward, so no change in the formation really, as far as I could see. But I feel like now that Oniki has changed something slightly, perhaps if you believe it, and we got a positive result, I feel like aside from the real sort of gimme games, if there are gimme games in the group stage, I can't really see him trying. Like, I can't really see him starting Seko in an important game. Just because I don't know, he seems to be a kind of conservative guy with a small c, I guess. I have no idea about his politics, but he just seems like he doesn't particularly want to risk anything. He's definitely risk averse, and I think that's why, like you said, he wants to play his best players, even if logic says maybe we shouldn't be playing the best players all the time. So yeah, it's an opportunity, but will we take it? I can't say we will for sure.
Well, yeah, it's obviously a cracker to open the group stage on Friday night against Ulsan, and should be a couple of terrific games against them. And yes, you hope you can take care of business. Obviously make it through as one of the group stage winners, if not one of the best second place finishers, to take you through to the knockout stage. So, Sam, before we let Neil go then, and we'll get his thoughts on Saturday night's visitors as well. What about Kashiwa then? As we said earlier, they'd actually risen to the top of the pile after their win last Tuesday night, before they were knocked back down a couple of spots when the other games were played in match day 7 on Wednesday. But this is a game, I guess, a stage that was set up for them, a Saturday night, the big game, the everybody watching, and unfortunately, apart from Tomoya Koyamatsu's chance in the 9th minute when it looked like Kazuya Yamamura was channeling Shogo Taniguchi from the previous week and, basically gifted Koyamatsu a chance clean through on Junsung Ryong. Once Koyamatsu had spurned that chance, that was about as good as it got for Reysol. And while Frontale didn't hit too many heights on Saturday night, Reysol couldn't really have any complaints, could they?
No, I think after that chance that they were second best, and the game kind of turned on that, because after Kawasaki's week, if Kashiwa would go 1-0 up inside 10 minutes, then it's a completely different game and Kashiwa would be full of confidence. They got through a tight game in midweek against Cerezo Osaka, and then this one would have put them in a great position. I mean, Koyamatsu probably should score himself, but there's a ball as well. If he squares it to Matheus Savio, it's an absolute tap-in. So, they wasted that. And it's unlike Koyamatsu, who I think has generally started this season very well. But then after that, it was a better Frontale performance than we'd probably seen the last couple of games. They were, I'd say, in control of the game. The majority of chances fell their way. And Kashiwa really struggled to lay a glove on them. So maybe it was just one game too far for Reysol in a week that they'd done very well in. Obviously beating Jubilo, beating Cerezo, both with clean sheets as well. So just a game too far for Reysol. But it wasn't a marked improvement, I thought, from Frontale, although nowhere near their blistering best.
Yeah, well, I mean, Racehall have been the biggest surprise packets of the season so far, Neil. But more importantly than that, you got to meet the great man, Tokyo Fox.
Yeah, lovely guy. And he took a selfie, which he said he wouldn't put on Twitter because I like to keep vague and anonymity. But I want him to be my personal photographer now because he made me look like I was about, well, 5 years younger than I am. And honestly, at my age, I'll take 5 years younger differently. If I can go back to being under 40, that'll be lovely because nothing was bad then. Everything hurts after 40. So, but yeah, he's a great guy. I felt a bit bad that he had to go and watch that game because, like you said, after that early chance, which I put in my notes as a major let off, nothing much really happened for them. So, but I think maybe that's why we felt positive afterwards. And I was kind of shocked when I saw that we'd only had 8 shots and they'd only had 4 shots because it felt like a really, really dominant performance from us, but not really in the shot count, I guess. So, but yeah, they're definitely surprising a few people this year. And I was disappointed that their keeper didn't do his sort of annual gift of a goal to us when he normally just like passes the ball to Ianaga to slot home or something like that. But yeah, they stopped us from scoring for most of the game. And also, it was weird that they and us had both played the same two teams previously. So we got 1 point and they got 6 points. So there's definitely something in that squad, I guess. But it's come as a surprise to everyone. But yeah, good luck to them for the rest of the season, apart from the away fixture.
Yes, yes. I guess after meeting the great man, you probably got a soft spot for Racehall for the rest of the campaign, and fair enough too. Yeah, wasn't Racehall's evening, and yeah, Frontale returned to the top of the table. Yeah, as we've said, there's all the caveats about having played the extra games, but yeah, 2 points ahead of F Marinos, who have done the same. So yeah, well, Neil, it's been great to catch up with you again. So yeah, back on top of the table, and yeah, we'd like to wish you and the Frontale all the best for the ACL group stage. Hope you return with a ticket to the knockout stages punched. But yeah, for now, great to catch up with you, and we look forward to doing so again throughout the season.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me again. And yeah, it's always a pleasure to talk with you guys.
Okay, great to catch up with Neil again, and let's wrap up the rest of the match day 8 fixtures by checking out the 3 draws played on Sunday at Ajinomoto Stadium. FC Tokyo hosted Urawa, and that finished 0-0. I guess you probably would have got fairly long odds on that scoreline at the start of play, Sam, but ultimately a pretty feisty affair that even I, as a Tokyo supporter, can hold my hands up and say I think Reds had the better of. But a disallowed goal, rather, aside, Reds weren't really banging the door down either, were they?
No, not really. And when both sides did have chances, I thought the goalkeepers played especially well. There were a lot of very good saves. Nishikawa made one from Adalton tipping onto the crossbar, and Slovic made a couple as well. So it was a pretty interesting contest. I think 0-0 doesn't tell the story of the game, but I do agree with you. I thought Reds probably shared it. They had the slightly better chances. They will feel aggrieved about the goal that was disallowed, but I think, unfortunately for them, it is just about a correct decision. But one, I can understand the frustration, because obviously Moberg, who actually does score, he was onside. But yeah, Sakai just decided to have a swing at it. He becomes active at that point, and he was in an offside position. So that goal was, unfortunately for Reds, ruled out. But yeah, they played quite well. I think they'll take positives from the way that they played. Tokyo were just about good enough defensively to keep them out, and had a few chances themselves. But as I say, it was probably goalkeepers on top.
Yeah, most definitely. And Moberg has definitely settled in very well at Saitama Stadium, hasn't he, Sam? And I think, yeah, goals in his first two league appearances, right? But yeah, he was denied one here in the 22nd minute. As you say, he was definitely onside when Kasper Juncker flicked a ball over the top inside the box. But, yeah, Hiroki Sakai, who was marginally offside, yeah, decided to stick out a leg and have a swing at the ball and, well, yeah, missed. And that allowed Moberg to steal in at the back post. But, yeah, we decided in the green room against playing the drop because, yes, we agree it was the right decision. Although, yeah, Reds could, well, feel a little bit unlucky that the goal was disallowed, but yeah, ultimately the correct decision. And yeah, for the most part, they had the better chances, the visitors. Again, holding my hands up there to admit that Ataru Isaka bicycle kicked wide about 10 minutes after the disallowed goal, and that was after Masato Morishige had cleared Sakai's header off the line. And then inside the last 20 minutes, there was yeah, a decent amount of goalmouth action. Jakub Slovic saved Ken Iwao's free kick from distance in the 71st minute. And then Yusuke Matsuo's first time strike from 25 yards flew just wide in the 77th minute. Yeah, that chance for Dialton, 7 minutes from time, drew an excellent save from Nishikawa, tipping the ball onto the bar. And yeah, just again, Tokyo with yeah, growing pains under Albert Pucci, and yeah, this was a not a terrific performance by any means, but yes, a point at home against Reds is well, half decent at least. Yeah, to not get beaten at home by one of your big rivals is yeah, something you can hang on to, I suppose. For Reds, Sam, I wonder as they head off themselves to the ACL, whether a jaunt like this might be actually becoming at just the right time and might have a really positive impact on their season, as they they've obviously played 10 league games thus far, and that's yeah, two more than almost everybody else. They sit 10th on 10 points, which is yeah, somewhat yeah, has a neat pattern to it, but they obviously want to be far higher in the table. I wonder, with the likes of Matsuo returning to fitness, Alex Schalk, who came on for his Reds debut in the last 10 minutes, and yeah, just a squad that has obviously undergone a lot of change in the last 15, 16 months, whether yeah, a trip away like this to the ACL group stage might be something that will really help them gel and, as I say, could propel them forward once they return to league action.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a perfect opportunity just for everyone to get used to the movement, that, especially in those forward areas, get used to the way that everyone else thinks, get used to combination play, because they're going to play in a group with the greatest of respect, Shandong's under-22s, the Lion City Sailors, and Daegu are probably one of the weaker Korean teams you could have picked in the group. They're going to be pretty comfortable games, you'd imagine, for Reds, and it allows different combinations to be tried out. It should get some more confidence boosting wins and goals, and I think yeah, they should come back a more cohesive unit. So I think it's exactly what Reds need, and I'm sure they're looking forward to the what kind of, was it a month away, something like that, 2 weeks, I don't really remember.
Yeah, at least 2 weeks, and then yeah, they've got to yeah, get through whatever quarantine, or has that been waived? I can't even remember myself, but yeah, it's yeah, 6 games in just over 2 weeks, I think, so they'll yeah, they won't have a massive amount of time to train, you'd imagine, but yeah, the bonding of a trip away like that will hopefully do them some good for the long term, if indeed everything is a smooth sailing in the squad, and yeah, everything is running to Ricardo Rodriguez's plan. So, yeah, 0-0 at Ajinomoto Stadium. It was 1-1 at Nihon Daira in the early game on Sunday when Shimizu S-Pulse hosted Gamba Osaka. In an end-to-end first half, the closest to either side came to a goal was when Gamba fullback Keisuke Kurokawa blasted narrowly across the face of goal from just inside the box just before halftime. Oh Se-hyun, who had come on for his S-Pulse debut for the last half hour of the 1-1 draw away at Reds in midweek, made his first start for S-Pulse on Sunday, and he netted his first Shimizu goal in the 57th minute, volleying in the rebound after Jun Ichimori had saved his initial header from strike partner Yuito Suzuki's cross. And though they had a hairy moment when Leandro Pereira headed against the post for Gamba with 3 minutes left, the Nihon Daira side looked set for a second win of the season before Kosuke Onose netted a 97th minute equalizer for Gamba with a low drive that squirmed in off Shuichi Gonda after Yuki Yamamoto's free kick appeared to have been handled in the S-Pulse wall. So I wonder what would have happened, Sam, if Gonda had have saved Onose's shot. It probably would have gone to VAR, and I wonder whether a penalty would have actually been given at the end of the day. So we said, well, heartbreak at the end for Fukuoka in their loss at Hiroshima. For Shimizu, then, yeah, seeing 3 points turn into one at the death after, look for all money that they were going to, claim that first home win of the season. Well, yeah, it was snatched away from them late on, wasn't it?
Yeah, very disappointing for them, because I thought, especially second half, they were much the better side. They'd been able to welcome back a few very key players. Matsuoka came on at half-time. We saw Thiago Santana come on late on, and then Katayama and Kamiya were brought off the bench, and they looked really strong, I thought, for most of that second half. I really like Osei Hyun. I mean, he's just kind of a physical nuisance in there. He doesn't give the centre-backs any time to settle. He always looks like he's going to just kind of knock you about a little bit for every cross that comes in. But, yeah, he gets his reward. He gets his goal. And, yeah, looked generally very good. And I think eventually, and I think I'm probably more positive on Shimizu than most people, but I think when their players do come back and they get a bit more fitness, I think they will start to pull away a little bit more from the ACL, because I think generally they played pretty well here. But I mean, at the end, I blame Valdo. I mean, he's always going to be involved, isn't he, at one end or the other, and he's a little bit careless. I mean, he got away with a foul just before this the free kick was given, and then to give away such a stupid free kick so close to the box with just a really poorly attempted tackle. It was just really sloppy, and then that leads to the goal, which Gonda should do better with. You imagine it would go to a penalty after VAR, but you can never be sure with that. So I think that the referees were just delighted that the ball went in, so they didn't have to make a decision. But yeah, generally, it was a better performance from Shimizu, one of their better ones this season, but just, yeah, silly error, I thought, at the end has cost them.
Yeah, and yeah, see what you mean about Gonda. I mean, it's one of those where you really want your keeper to save that, don't you? And you know, you wonder if how closely Hajime Moriyasu has been watching over the past few days, because Yuto Nagatomo had an absolute howler to gift Kobe their goal at Ajinomoto Stadium last Wednesday night, and then Gonda's letting in shots like that. Last minute effort from Onose, which obviously was struck very sweetly by the Gumba player, no question about that. But yeah, you really want your international number one to be saving shots like that, especially at such an important juncture in the game with literally the last kick. So frustration for S-Pulse, for Gumba, another point earned, their fourth draw of the season. They're becoming a draw specialist themselves, and they're 11th after 10 match days. The last game then, it probably won't take us too much time to get through, Sam. It was played between two occupants of the bottom four. Bottom club Shonan hosted Iwata, who are 15th in the table after eight match days. A goal difference ahead, one goal of goal difference ahead of their prefectural rivals, that I'm sure their fans are enjoying while it lasts. As you say, I'm expecting Shimizu to maybe kick clear of the relegation zone in the next couple of months. But for now, they're still below Iwata, who, if Kenyu Sugimoto had his shooting boots on, Sam, they would have left the Lemon Gas Stadium with all 3 points, no question, Jubilo. But it wasn't Sugimoto's day, and ultimately it was yet another frustrating afternoon for Phil Belmare as well.
Yeah, it was not the greatest game. It was more exciting than I perhaps imagined. There were a few good chances. Sugimoto he's one of those with Sakai and Lukian at the moment where he can't buy a goal, nothing to really going for him at the post, obviously, in this. Shonan seemed to sign up Ricardo Grasso, who had probably their best opportunity heading towards his own goal, and it was a good save from Mura. So it wasn't without its chances this game, but it was a game really lacking in quality. And yeah, I mean, it's hard to look at this stage that you'd say neither of these teams are going to be in the relegation zone. I imagine both of them to be there, probably 17th and 18th. It was, yeah, it's one game, especially home to Jubilee, it's a game where Shonan really have to start winning these sorts of games. And as you say, Jubilee were probably the better team. So, yeah, it's hard to see where the positivity is going to come from for Shonan. They just don't really look capable of scoring goals. And that's obviously a massive problem in this league.
Yeah, no question. So the woodwork was hit three times in this game. Sugimoto's header in the 31st minute grazed the woodwork on its way out of play. Then with 5 minutes left, Rio Germain, the Iwata substitute, saw his curler deflected onto the bar off the back of a Belmare defender. And then with 3 minutes left, Yusuke Sagawa's 25-yard blast came back off the post for the hosts. But yes, as we said, it ended in frustration for them again. And that is match day eight wrapped up then. So let's have look ahead ever so briefly to match day nine then. Sam, well, there's no choice for you. As we mentioned earlier, on Saturday, the only game is the lunchtime kickoff up at the Sapporo Dome when, yeah, Consadole entertain FC Tokyo. But yes, yeah, some really interesting looking games for you to sink your teeth into on Sunday.
It's difficult to really, they're all pretty interesting. Let's say Kashima versus Nagoya, two teams that need to bounce back. That should be a really interesting one. And then Kashima versus Kyoto as well. This is kind of the first kind of real blip that Kashima have had, losing to Kawasaki, which we spoke with Neil. So, and against Kyoto side, who've managed to look decent against everyone that they've played, and they've seemed to have had game plans for everyone. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal with Matteo Savio and Koyamatsu. Those two are obviously causing a lot of issues, usually for race. Also, that has a really intriguing feel to it as well. And plus, we've got the start of the Asian Champions League as well. So I think game is being played Friday, Saturday, and then Monday, I think, are the next game. So, yeah, a lot to really to get our teeth into over this weekend.
Yeah, no question. And geez, what odds would you have gotten on both Kashiwa and Kyoto being inside the top seven after eight match days, and their clash at the Hitachi Dai being arguably, in fact, I don't think there is much argument at all that it's the pick of the match day nine fixtures. Well, both teams deserve massive credit for their starts to the season. And I'm sure it's going to be an entertaining one. It's the late game on Sunday as well. So it has a stage all to itself, as the race all have gotten in the last couple of match days, haven't they? So they're in the spotlight again, and they'll look to bounce back, as you say, Sam, from that defeat against Kawasaki in match day eight. All right, so we'll leave it there then. That is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Neil Debnam again for his time on this week's episode, and thanks to our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. Listeners, of course, as we say each and every week, we'd also like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to review J1 Match Day 9. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.